Right, good evening everyone. I'd like to welcome you to this public meeting organised by the Tyneside Stop the War Coalition and the University Place Space and Politics Research Cluster. And my name's Roger Nettleship. I'm one of the activists of the Tyneside Stop the War Coalition and its convener. And I'd like to welcome you. I can see that in the audience we have a number of old faces from 10 years ago, and we have a lot of new faces, and I think we have quite a lot of students from university, both universities. So congratulations to you for coming to this meeting. We are marking 10 years of the War on Terror and the Stop the War movement, and this meeting has been organised just before the Stop the War movement is launching its mass assembly in London, which I'm sure Lindsay will talk about. But if anybody has to leave early, then leave your name if you want to go. We speak to David on the bookstall, and we will take bookings for the for the coach, which is going down. We have a 29-seater coach going down on Saturday. So the programme for tonight's meeting is that we have two speakers. Firstly, Lindsay German, who is the national convener of Stop the War Coalition, has been in that post since 2001, and she's the co-author of Stop the War, the story of Britain's biggest mass movement, and it certainly is a great movement that has taken place in Britain since 2001. I remember 10 years ago when thousands marched down Northumberland Street against the occupation of Afghanistan, and certainly that movement has never stopped fighting to build the peace movement in Britain and change the country into an anti-war country, not a pro-war country. And we also have Professor Stuart Eldon, Durham University, who's author of the award-winning book Terror and Territory, The Spatial Extent of Sovereignty. And then following that, we have a film which is apparently a world premiere. It's War and Anti-War, and is a new film set in the weeks after 9/11, and it has been premiered simultaneously in London and here tonight. The only difference here tonight, it's free, although it's not free. We'll come on to that. We'd like you to make a contribution to this meeting. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Lindsay. What we'll do with Lindsay is Lindsay has to go early to catch a train, so she will speak, and then we'll give you an opportunity to ask her questions, and then we'll have the second speaker, and then once we've finished the discussion, we'll have the film. So I'd like to welcome you, Lindsay, to Tyneside and to this Stop the War meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Roger, and I'd like first of all to apologise for the fact that I do have to leave early. I'm afraid, well, it's a very good thing that we're very, very busy in our office in London with the event on Saturday. We think it's going to be a very exciting event. It does mark the 10th anniversary. We're even hoping that Noam Chomsky is going to come and speak, because he's in London on that day. So any of you who are interested in that, please, he signed a letter that's in The Guardian, I think, tomorrow, saying he will be there. So, but we're expecting lots and lots of people, not just famous professors from America, but people from all over Britain, and also hopefully people from other parts of the world. And we think it's going to be a great day. But it does mean that I can't stay here, as I normally would, much later. So please, apologies for that. Apologies to all of you. Apologies to Stuart for that. So I'd like, in the time that I've got, just to make a few points about this 10 years on from the War on Terror. Now, it's really great to see so many young people here today, and I think being one of the older faces that does remember 10 years ago and was involved in it 10 years ago, it gives me great pleasure to think that actually, whatever the difficulties of stopping these wars, there's a whole new generation of people who care about these issues, who think these issues are important. And in my view, there is very few more important issues than these questions of war and peace and what is going on in the world today. Because we live in a world that is extremely dangerous and, again, in my view, it's getting more dangerous. That it's not becoming a safer place, as we were told when the war on terror was launched 10 years ago. It's not becoming a more stable place. It hasn't dealt with the question of terrorism. Again, I'm sure Stuart will talk much more about this. But it is a question that nobody, particularly in a country like Britain, can ignore or should ignore. And those of us who've come to the conclusion that these wars are wrong, I think we have an obligation to continue campaigning, to continue demonstrating, to continue doing all of those things. Now, I want to go back briefly to 10 years ago, because I was one of the people who founded the Stop the War Coalition, and I did so, of course, as a result of the events of 9/11. And I remember, like probably most people here, when you first heard about 9/11 and tried to make sense of it. And I was recovering from a minor operation, sitting on my settee, and then put the television on to watch the TUC, which I don't normally do, but I suppose you get bored when you're sitting at home like this. And of course, you had these pictures of the Twin Towers, and you saw all these things. You saw these terrible events, you saw the terrible scenes, which of course have been all replayed over the last months, the scenes of people jumping out of windows and the terrible, terrible things. And there is nothing, there cannot be a human being in the world who doesn't feel terribly upset to see those pictures again, which in my view is one of the reasons why you had so much of it going on over the last months. But what I felt very, very strongly when I watched them was that these events were portrayed as though they'd happened a month before or a week before. They were taken totally out of context, and you would not have thought that there had been 10 years of war in between the anniversary scenes and the original scenes. And it seems to me that one of the things we have to do is to put all these questions in context. The reason there are wars, the reason there is terrorism, the reason there is all these things, there's political roots to why all these things happen. If people remember what Osama bin Laden said as his reason for the 9/11 attacks, he said three things. He said, it is in protest at the treatment of the Palestinians in the Middle East. It is a protest at the treatment of the Iraqis, who at the time had one Gulf War. This was obviously before the war in 2003, had one Gulf War and were now suffering a no-fly zone, sanctions, which were reckoned to have killed up to 500,000 Iraqi children, the impact of the sanctions over the years. The third thing he said was that he objected to American troops being on Saudi soil in the Middle East. American troops in the Middle East. Now, whatever you think about bin Laden, actually what he was representing was a strand of opinion in the Middle East and in the wider world which saw what was happening in the region as something they very much wanted to oppose. The truth is, if you look 10 years on, all those three things that bin Laden said were a reason for him doing this have become worse. The situation of the Palestinians has become worse. The war in Iraq in 2003 has left, nobody knows how many dead because nobody counts the Iraqi dead, but the most conservative estimates put it in hundreds of thousands, and one estimate, one survey, put it at over 1 million people. We do know, because according to the United Nations we have this figure, that 4 million people died. 4 million people were refugees in Iraq, from Iraq, mainly in Syria, mainly in Jordan and in Syria. We do know that the country is still a complete mess. And we do know that Afghanistan, which was the first war, George Bush went into this war, supposedly because the Taliban government was harbouring bin Laden, and this had to be dealt with, again, many of us said there had to be a political solution to this. I was all in favour of Bin Laden being arrested and put on trial. I wasn't in favour of invading and bombing one of the poorest countries in the world because somebody supposedly was living in their territory. Now, if you look 10 years on, in Afghanistan, we were told in November 2001 that this war was finished. The Taliban was overthrown. John Simpson from the BBC rode into Kabul on a tank and declared that there would be peace and liberation for the Afghans. Now, for the first 5 years of that war, only 7 British servicemen were killed in Afghanistan. Virtually none were killed, and some of those were killed through car accidents and not through combat of any sort. Since 2006, there have been nearly 400 British soldiers killed in Afghanistan. And they're barely commented on in the media and in the press. A couple of weeks ago, a young man who was a soldier in Britain who was training to go to Afghanistan was killed in an exercise which used live ammunition, was killed by mistake. There was 3 times as much column inches about that in The Guardian as there was about an actual soldier who had been killed in Afghanistan on the same day. The truth is, they are not winning this war and they want to have it as background. They don't want it as something that we talk about, that we campaign about, that we know about. And this is why all the time they try to minimise it. And you would think, really, if you looked at Afghanistan today, that really the troops, and there are 100,000, more than 100,000 foreign troops in Afghanistan today, a huge number of troops 10 years after. I mean, this is a war which has gone on longer than the First World War, longer than the Second World War, pretty much longer than both of them put together. When you actually look at that number of troops that are in Afghanistan, the way it is portrayed is that these people are simply helping the Afghan people, that they're there because the Afghans couldn't run the country on their own, that they're there because they've got to train up Afghan police and soldiers to run the country for themselves. It is a complete lie, this story which is told about Afghanistan. If you look at what is happening in Afghanistan, 3 times as many airstrikes are taking place now than there were a year ago. There's a report in The Guardian today about the number of civilians killed by British soldiers alone. Very substantial numbers of civilians killed. When you look at a report recently, said that in Afghanistan, every single night, there are 40 raids on people's houses looking for so-called terrorists. Now, Afghanistan has a population something like the state of Texas in America. And I ask you to imagine what it would be like in Texas is every single night people's homes were broken into, people were taken away to prison, sometimes they're shot, their families are terrorised. It is no wonder that there is growing opposition to what the occupation and what the war is doing. Now, the one main argument that is put against this is really the argument that things would just get so much worse that we can't stay there any longer, and that the Taliban will come back. What our government doesn't tell you is that already the Americans and the British and the other NATO forces are talking to the Taliban. And the most likely thing, the absolute certainty, is within a few years the Taliban will be in some way back in government, put there by the NATO forces and by Karzai, the president of Afghanistan. They may well partition the country in order to do it, but they are absolutely looking at a solution where there is some kind of power-sharing process and the Taliban are part of this. So this kind of, we're there to stop the Taliban, is the grossest hypocrisy, because at the same time, they know they can't win this war, and therefore they're talking to them. And, you know, I don't suppose many of us have got much time for the Taliban, but the truth is the people who replaced the Taliban have no better record on democracy, have no better record on women's rights, actually have a worse record on corruption. Afghanistan is one of the 10 most corrupt countries. There is an index of corruption officially which puts Afghanistan and Iraq among the top 10 most corrupt in the world. So there is nothing really that is being done. Nobody knows what the war is for. The British government put on their website, if you want to go and look at it, they say it's to make Britain a safer place and so on. Well, I think very few people believe that that has been the outcome of this war or the war in Iraq. And of course they seem to be addicted to war. We've had war again this year in Libya with the continual bombing of people, allegedly again a humanitarian intervention. You know, you'd never think that war ever involved anything except for caring for civilians and looking after them. But actually, thousands of civilians have died as a result of the bombing and the war in Libya, and we haven't seen the end of it yet. So these, and I believe the main reason for that war in Libya was to rehabilitate this idea of humanitarian intervention. It did fail in Iraq very, very badly. It has failed in Afghanistan, and they want to be able to justify their wars by saying that they're doing it to help humanity. I don't think that we should really accept it. A couple of quick points I'd like to make before I conclude. I've talked about the situation with the war, but I'd also like to link it up with the cost of the war, particularly, I think, when we're talking in a higher education institute, where students next year will have to pay £9,000 a year. Students already pay £3,000 a year, where education budgets are being cut, where school budgets are being cut, where the health service is under threat, where welfare is under threat, and we're told we don't have enough money for libraries and all these other kind of things. Already, nearly £2 billion has been spent on the Libya bombing alone, as opposed to the figure George Osborne gave a few months ago. It would cost tens of millions. £1.75 billion and rising. This is what this bombing costs. The war in Afghanistan costs £4.5 billion a year. That's just the war in Afghanistan. And this doesn't include the long-term costs of the people who are maimed and injured mentally and physically and all the other things that go on. So there is a tremendous harm that is being done by this addiction to war, that we are spending all this money on war, we're bringing death and destruction to countries when we cannot even care for people in the way that we used to be able to do so. And it strikes me something very, very wrong with a society which has endless money for war but can't find money for the poorest and the most vulnerable people in our society. And I think that's something that we should change. There is also a huge democratic deficit here, that 74% of people in this country believe that the troops should be withdrawn immediately or very swiftly, within a year, within 9 months, those kind of figures. And yet all the main parties justify the war, continue to support the war. It was very important this year at the Trade Union Congress that actually they passed a resolution opposing what was going on in Libya and Palestine and calling for the withdrawal of British troops, which I think it's taken the TUC 10 years, but better late than never, and it's a very important thing that we should use, and we should fight among trade unions and students to make this a reality everywhere, because we have to increase our campaigning over Afghanistan. We cannot have another 10 years. We cannot have a society where foreign policy has endless money for these kind of things, not for aid, which the Tories were talking about cutting aid to some of the poorest people who might need it in the world, including the Afghans, who get a fraction of money in aid compared to what is spent on the military there. I think we have to say we will redouble our efforts to build our campaign, and therefore we're asking people, if you can, to come down on Saturday to this assembly. It will be, I think, a fantastic event and a very, very important event. And we will end up being led by ex-soldiers marching down to Downing Street to tell David Cameron exactly what we think of his war. So you're very, very welcome to come, and you can talk to people about that. But please, if you can't come then, please do continue campaigning, and let's increase our campaign in Newcastle and everywhere else around the country. You know, Remembrance Day is coming up in November. Now, we're not against the soldiers who die. These people are suffering in the same way as many other people are suffering. But we do need to say that this Remembrance Day shouldn't be used to justify war in the way that it is. It should be used as a message that we don't want any more wars and we don't want these things to continue. So I'll end there. I'd like to thank you very much for listening, and I've got a little bit of time to take questions, and I hope you enjoy the film, and I hope you enjoy Stuart's speech, and I hope you will get involved and keep campaigning. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Lindsay. I'll take questions now for Lindsay before she has to go.